Hey, yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music on the air and in your ear. And I am Martin, and with me is, what's your name again?
I'm Mr. Brett Podcast.
Mr. Brett Podcast, the king of the casters. I've heard about you. I've also heard about our guest today. Tell everybody who we got on with us.
That's right. Well, we have a returning guest. It's great because he actually wanted to come back on the show. So obviously we're doing something right. Wonderful singer, wonderful band, Jeff Carlson. Happy to have you back.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much. The pleasure's all mine. It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're excited to talk about Yesterday's Gone. April 23rd, that's actually when my son was born, so it's like a special day all around.
Awesome. Well, happy birthday.
So, yeah, it's you get to release a full-length album, which is your first, which is pretty freaking awesome. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm great. Doing really good. I'm waiting for things to start opening back up so we can start playing again.
We're getting closer. Getting closer.
Yeah.
You know, finally getting closer.
Feels not like quick enough, but
not enough. No. Well, you know, I mean, that's the thing. Like, we had a chance to listen to the album because you're kind enough to share it with us. And I got to tell you, I don't know. I thought you liked us, but you went ahead and kicked our ass. So I guess you don't.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
No, it's great stuff. You know, I was actually blown away by, like, lyrically, just how raw and honest it is. And at times even political, you know, I mean, I didn't see that coming.
I try not to be too political when it comes to, I don't want to step on anybody's toes and maybe have it alienate anybody on my own personal thoughts and feelings, you know. But at the same time, I do think it's a fine line. You have to balance what you feel versus, you know, trying not to hurt anybody's feelings out there. But I think it's important as an artist, you have to write what you feel, you know. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at, where my frame of thought was at.
So how difficult is that? Is that to just be so honest in your lyrics? It's a weird job. You know, I just occurred to me, your job is to be judged by everybody. That's actually your job.
Pretty much. Yeah. Well, you know, I think a lot of people will see through you if you're bullshitting them.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd rather be honest and true to what my heart is at than trying to please everybody, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, because at the end of the day, you have to be happy with what you've done, you know. So I don't mean to place importance over myself over everybody else. I don't mean it like that. It's not a narcissist thing or anything like that. But at the same time, you have to find, you know, some honesty, because I think people will definitely see through that if they don't. If you're not honest with yourself, you know.
Well, and
that's,
I think
how I look at
it. Also comes down to something even more. I mean, like, Martin and I have our creative side outside of this as well, and I think it's like you're trying to create the product that feels best for you, that is the one that you, when it comes out, you're saying, like, I am most proud of this. I did the best that I absolutely could. And I think that if you're not honest, then how can you say that?
Right, exactly. That's one of the, exactly what you said. That's another reason we decided to make it a full-length record and take the time and really do the detail work in it. Because given, you know, the whole COVID thing, and it wasn't like we were pressured to tour or anything like that, at least not yet anyway. So I figured, you know, let's take advantage of this time we've got and really do the best we could with what we had to work with. You know,
I remember when we talked to you last time, and, you know, you had the Tupac Heroes cover out, and you said, you know, I make sure we choose songs that suit my voice. So do you, when you're doing this, when you're constructing all, you know, largely all your own songs, are you really also aware of that? Like, okay, this is a song that will take advantage of my voice.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We were going to cover, we all love the song Jane from Starship, you know, and it's an amazing song. And Mickey Thomas still has his range, which he's a, you know, amazing. Even though I could do it, it was a real struggle for me range wise. So, you know, rather than put something out that I feel as if I'm really, you know, killing myself to hit the notes, I'd rather do something that's a little more in my wheelhouse and really, you know, do something that I feel more comfortable with. And that's why we chose Lottie Day from Journey. One, it's not a huge hit, but at the same time, it wasn't so high that, you know, it's in the stratosphere. I mean, most of Perry's stuff is in the stratosphere, but that one song in particular, we've been playing it live for years. And I just thought, you know what, let's do something that we actually don't have to struggle on, but yet still sounds good. So that's kind of the reasoning behind that song, you know.
I mean, one of my favorite things about this album is just the guitar work, honestly. I mean, it's so in your face, it's so crunchy, and it's just, you know, and it's just like really meaty. And I think you guys got a great sound, but it's also like, you know, it's very much at the forefront, and I appreciate that a lot.
Oh yeah, thanks. Yeah. Well, we're a guitar driven band. I mean, me and Robbie, our influences are, I mean, my influences are Dave Menichetti, you know, he's one of my heroes. Neil Sean, you know, guys like that with, you know, George Lynch, he's one of my heroes. I mean, that whole genre is amazing. It starts with guitar, you know, especially the 80s, you know, and Robbie's too. His is Jimmy Page and Ace Frehley and you know, band, you know, stuff like that. And the guitar starts with that with us, you know. We kind of start from there and build from it.
It's funny, we just talked to George Lynch, and he was one of my heroes going into the interview, and he was even more one of them coming out.
Oh, that's cool. He's a great guy, and he's so down to earth.
He's so dude. George. Like,
yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a kook.
Yeah, he is. Oh, yeah, he was spray painting a guitar the whole time he was talking to us, so he has all this noise in the background, and yet he was just awesome. Somehow it was just pure George.
Yeah, some guys can get away with those kind of things. So now tell me, Jeff, is there a moment in your career when you're like, can I be eccentric and be loved for being eccentric?
I try not to be. That's a good question. There are certain things, you know, I mean, as far as like, you know, personality wise, I think, you know, I don't know. I try not to be too far left field. You know, I try to stay away. That's a tough question because I don't really have anything that I can, you know, fall back onto where I can say, oh yeah, I did that one time. And yeah, it was, you know, so I try to be as low maintenance as possible, man. That's a pretty safe answer.
Those personality quirks are hidden under the, you know, it's just like, well, maybe later we'll see.
Yeah. Right.
When
I feel
huge.
Like I haven't made it big enough yet to be able to afford to be any kind of eccentric. So.
Hopefully someday then.
Well, I guess we'll see, but
yeah, those are always the weirdest moments because, I mean, it's like, you know, especially back in the 80s, I mean, people, you know, skyrocketed to fame so fast, and then they began the low, you know, the long journey towards non-stardom. And I think that now it's just like everybody's kind of starting off in that non-stardom, and you're kind of just hoping to find a piece of the pie enough to gather, you know, just core fans. And you seem to be doing a great job of gathering fans. I mean, because your social media presence is amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, that's, you have to, there's certain things in today's world that you have to be able to adjust to, you know, and that's one of them. I try to do everything with, you know, that in mind, you know, but at the same time, I think it's real important to have a group of guys, a team behind you that really help you out. And that's where I'm at with my management, Nolan Hodges, and my label, John Marhefka with the RFL Records, those guys, and Doug Franklin, those guys are awesome, man. I'm so thankful for those guys. They really do help.
How did you?
It's funny.
Oh,
I gotta say real quick before I go on. You're talking about being eccentric. All I could think about was that scene on Spinal Tap when Nigel was trying to fold the bread and he's telling his manager, "I don't want this. I can't fold the bread." Anyway, sorry.
Well, Spinal Tap is a treasure trove of eccentricities.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna have to watch that now again.
We've gone through so many drummers, I swear to God, we are a living Spinal Tap, the real deal.
Have they all died? Have they all died?
Yeah, yeah. Is that an accident?
I do hope that you haven't been playing and one of them spontaneously combusted. That would be
Yeah, that was the best. Right? Spontaneously combusted.
Stumpy Joe. Right?
So awesome.
I don't know. I don't know, Jeff. I think when the world is open, we need to come down and watch Spinal Tap with you.
Oh, big time! Yeah,
that'd
man.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
So the album, back to the album. It's good and heavy. You know, I mean, it's really melodic and yet really heavy. In fact, that's got to be a fine line to. I find that's where a lot of people fail when they're trying to do heavy rock, but they don't just. Can't get it quite melodic enough. They can't find that balance. You managed to find that balance.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, it's a work in progress, you know. We're straight out of the Journey, big arena rock, you know, Billy Squier, Def Leppard, all those big vocal bands, you know. And to me, that's the best, is when you can combine a guitar driven song with vocal melody that really moves you, and that's where it's at for me.
And one of the things though you got on here is you got that, I guess we call it the killer ballad, Promise the Moon, you know. It's I mean, and you got an orchestral version that unfortunately we didn't get a chance to hear, but I know we will. So tell me about Promise the Moon.
Well, that's a funny you ask. I wrote that song, actually. I co-wrote it. My first real original band I had in 19 – God, when was it? 1992, I think it was. Anyway, I'm from Springfield, Missouri originally, and the band I had was called China Blue. And it actually – we all wrote that from – my guitar player, Clark, he had a bad breakup at the time. And we just kind of all wrote that. And, you know, we broke up, but I always took that song with me. And I always thought, you know what, that song really deserves to be, you know, written maybe a little different structure wise than we originally wrote it. But it deserved to have the production and the writing level that it should have had since day one. So that's why I always loved that song. So that's why I always wanted to do it, you know. So yeah, that's where that came from originally.
Were you refining it a lot for the album then, you know, just fixing those lyrics up? And
yeah, we played it for years off and on, and when we brought it back into the fold, we decided to really make it what it became. And I owe a lot of that to Brandon Wolf, Robbie's his son, who produced the record. He added piano with it and orchestral, a little bit of background to it. So I think a lot of that helps, you know. They really do.
I think it's probably the song on the album that best showcases your voice, personally.
Well, thank you.
So I know it's one of Brett's favorites too.
Oh, awesome. I've had a lot of compliments on that song. I think it'll be our second single. It'll either be that second or third single off the record. So yeah.
Well, and of course, Fire is your first single, and I mean that's a catchy damn song right there.
Oh, thank you. I wrote it for my wife, you know, and it's funny because we had like so many different versions of this song. We had like four different structures of it, four or five different structures of it, and finally we decided, you know what, let's just we circled back around to the original structure and just kind of. Chopped it a little bit, you know, and made it what it became. And I think it came out really good. I mean, I even sent it to Mark Slaughter and said, "Hey, man, what are you here for this?" You know, and he came up with a completely different song. It wasn't even the same song. So I was just like, well, Okay, and then, you know, John from the label, he's, you know, he's a big man on campus there, so at the label, so, you know, kind of what he likes, I kind of got to go with, you know, so he really liked the original version of it, so we just thought, you know what, let's just bring it back around, and then we'll refine it from there, so that's what happened, yeah.
Where do you shoot the music video for that? It looks like it was an empty bar or something.
No, I wish it was. It wasn't, actually. It was an old warehouse. It was the dirtiest video we have ever been in. It was like, after that video shoot, I needed to take like 10 baths. I mean, I swear to God, I was just like caked with dirt. It was awful.
Oh, really?
We had a great time shooting it. I mean, you know, the guy that shot it for us, he did the Screaming Inside video, and he's a great guy. But man, that warehouse, oof, I don't think we'll be going back there again to shoot another one.
Was he the location manager on it too?
Right, exactly. Yeah. No, it was here in Vegas we shot it, but man, oof.
It's got a pretty cool look to it though. You know, yeah. I mean, obviously it's kind of bare bones and just straight ahead for the rock and roll song that it is, but it's got a pretty cool look.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. That's the whole, you know, It's hard too when you, even as big as Vegas is, you've got to be conscientious of the fact that you can't really shoot each video in the same place because it's going to look like it, you know. So you got to be a little more creative and try to. And so we came up with that place, you know. And you know, I mean, yeah, I thought it turned out really good, but considering what we had, the crap we had to deal with when we shot it, it was just like, oh.
You need a makeup person around there to, like, you know, touch you up and, oh my, you're caked in dirt.
Yeah. it was so like third world country-ish. I had to drink a six pack just to get through the video shoot, man. Like,
twist my arm. I guess I got to drink another.
I know, right?
As long as you're not like pouring it over your head or something like that.
It does make it easier to get through it though. <Take my day. laughs>
So one of the other songs I really like on there, because I love the title, Liquid Sky. Such a good title. Where'd that come from?
Oh, thank you. That's actually an old band name we had from 2001. I actually came up with that name years ago when me and Robbie and Corey started playing together, and we spelled it with an E, and I found out years later there was another English band, I think, with that spelling. So by the time I got my record deal, I just thought, you know what, there's so many bands out there with names that are, if they're semi-normal, or not normal, but if they're semi-common, they're going to be taken, you know, and I just got to a point where I just didn't care. I was like, you know what, throw it under my name. And it's not a, you know, an ego thing or anything like that, but it was more of a, I'm sick of trying to find a band name that's already been taken kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's where that originally came from. So
it's really cool. I mean, I just, you know, I mean, as soon as you say that title, I think it evokes an image, you know, and then the song kind of cements it, right?
Yeah, we took it from, you know, Robbie's a huge Zeppelin, Jimmy Page fan. So, you know, he played his violin bow in that middle section, which I thought was kind of cool, you know. Yeah. So.
Now, did I read, too, that Mark Slaughter did a solo on one of the songs?
Yeah, he did a solo on Latter Day, the Journey remake.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, so how long have you known Mark in that regard? And, I mean, does he live in Vegas, too? Yes?
No, he's from Vegas originally.
Yeah.
But he lives in Nashville now. I've known Mark since, what, 16, 17, something like that. I think 17. I used to live in Tucson, Arizona, and I had a buddy of mine in Tucson that was putting together a show. He was a promoter at the time, and he basically called Mark and he said, hey, I've got some local guys here in Tucson that are willing to back you up. You want to come out and do a show? So we learned a whole set of Mark Slaughter. I mean, yeah, we played the Slaughter songs, you know, the hits, you know, like Up All Night, Fly to the Angels, that stuff. But we also played stuff off of Mark's solo record. What was his last one he did?
I know the one you're talking of. Yep.
Yeah, I can't remember the name.
Here with Me or Halfway There. That's the name of it. Halfway There. And that's a great record, man. Oh my God, I love that record. His guitar tone in that is monstrous. So he came out and we did a whole set together, man. And ever since then, me and Mark have been, you know, just we'll pick up where we left off, kind of like me and Frank Cannon. We could go, you know, 6 months without talking to each other, but it seems like yesterday. You know what I mean? So it's all good. Mark's a great guy. I love him to death, and he stepped up and helped me out. Throw down the lead for Latter Day, and I loved it. I thought it came out great, you know.
Well, and it's so crazy because I know, like, I mean, Martin and I have talked to a couple of you guys now that have had Mark come in and do lead guitar, and we never think of Mark as a lead guitarist because he's, you know, kind of a good singer.
You think? He's amazing. Oh my God. Well, you know, originally I was going to have him sing on it. But if you listen to the words are a little, it's like Steve Perry singing to a chick, you know? And we both kind of went, I don't think that's a duet for two dudes to sing. <You know? laughs> So we just left it with it. I just sang it and had him play the guitar on it. It was better fitting that way.
He's so effortless, isn't he? You know, that's when I've seen him play live, that's what I've come across was this, like, it's just effortless from that guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's amazing. He's one of the best, man. He really is. And I don't think he gets enough credit as a guitar player. He's an amazing guitar player. I mean, yeah, he's a great singer. Don't get me wrong, but he's known for his voice. But man, especially that early Vinnie Vincent stuff. Oh my God, that stuff. Forget about it. It's amazing.
Oh yeah, so, I mean when Vinnie found him, I mean that was just one of those moments of like. You know, you can't be Vinnie Vincent. And I know Robert Fleischman did okay, but, like, you can't be Vinnie Vincent Invasion without Mark Slaughter. That's just the way I see it.
No, and I figure Mark Slaughter's a saint because he worked with Vinnie Vincent.
Yeah,
as long as he did. That's his saint. It's never known to be an easy thing.
Mark's awesome.
Yeah, somehow it makes me, I don't know why this is makes me, somehow I come back to this and all of a sudden I just go, hey, Kiss is about to do their last concert, so we're gonna, that's sad. Isn't that sad?
I know, right?
I can't imagine a world without being able to go see Kiss.
I know, I'm with you, brother. Yeah. You know.
Well, it's one of those questions, you know, like when it comes to Kiss, and I know, I think like Gene has touched on it a little bit, but the idea of having other people come in and be the characters and like continuing the band name. Like, I mean, I know Jeff that you're a fan of Kiss and stuff like that. So how do you feel about that concept of like Kiss carrying on as a band, but none of the original four would be in it?
Not a fan, honestly. To be honest with you, I'm diehard, man. I'm the original four. I grew up in the 70s. So to me, I'm not saying that Tommy and Eric aren't good players. They're great players. But the magic to me was Ace, Gene, Paul, and Peter. That's what it's all about for me. And if they want to continue it, that's their right. But as a diehard original fan, I don't really have that great of a – I mean, it's not something that really excites me, put it that way.
You know, there's so many great tribute bands to them. This is the thing. And they're all doing Ace, you know, Peter, Paul, and Gene. You know, they're all doing the original four. And, I mean, that's good enough for me personally. You know, I'm like, I'll go see those tribute bands. Those bands are usually really good, and they put in a hell of an effort. And they give us the old show, you know. And that's good enough for me. I don't need it from the official band where, I don't know, it's like – it's you can be the characters, but you can't be the characters. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I'll go see a tribute band all day long. That's fine. I mean, but that's what it is. I mean, and it's unless you're Gene and Paul, nobody to me really has that right to call it Kiss. You know, I mean, that's just how I feel about it. That, I mean, even though they endorse it. Yeah.
Well, it's such a different concept, and I think that when it comes down to it, the only person with the balls to ever do it would be Gene Simmons.
That's true.
Yeah, no, and you know, again, that's something that he has every right to do if that's what he chooses, you know. But as a fan, as a diehard fan, it doesn't excite me. You know, it just doesn't.
So back that's to your album.
Sorry, that's my two cents.
No, I get it.
Like I say, I'll go see the tribute bands, and I'm good enough. Yeah. But back to your album. Who did how did you get the cover? Who put the cover together?
It's pretty cool. Thank you. I had a guy by the name of Nick Schoniker. He's a friend of the John, our label president from RFL. He's actually out of Canada as well. He's a wrestler, but he also does graphic arts stuff. And he helped me design it. I gave him we all put in our thoughts on, you know, what we wanted the front to look like and the back to look like, and he came up with the actual designs on it. So yeah, that's how that came about.
Yeah. So I mean, does he present you like a whole bunch of different designs and then you pick one, or?
Well, he had about two or three different covers that were basically the same, but like some of them had more Polaroids on them. Actually, we came up with the idea that we put it on. I have a fan page on Facebook called JCB Army, and I put it out there. I said, hey, if you guys want to be on our new record, here's your chance. We'll post the song titles, and you guys send us what you think the song title looks like in a picture, you know. And we had a few people send in, and we picked what we liked the best, you know. And we're including them on the liner notes, you know, the two women that sent them in to us. They're really
That's
sweet.
That's really cool.
Yeah,
JCB Army. There's another little nod to Kiss, huh?
Yeah. Hopefully, Gene will send me a cease and desist letter.
Well,
I own the name Army. You cannot use it.
Yeah.
Well, have you guys ever seen
the liner notes? It's just funny because, you know, I mean, we were just having a discussion. Who was it with, Brett, the other day? We were talking about how much we miss those, how they're gone.
I guess that was Dante and David from Rough Ends that we were talking to.
It's like liner notes and everything being digital now. That's like a lost art, and it's so sad.
Right, I know, dude. Trust me, if I had my way, it would just be really hella expensive. But if I had my way, we would put. You remember, like on Kiss Alive, they had the booklets, you know.
I would love
something like that, you know. But unless you're, you know, Kiss, can get that money back. It's tough to put that much money into something and get it back right out of the gate, you know. But yeah, man. I love the fact that we're going to do vinyl on this too, by the way, which is making a huge comeback. So I think it'll be out in October because they're backed up a little bit, but the actual hard copy CD will be out on the 23rd. So that's something. Yeah.
Well, it's
what
cool
do you think vinyl's making a comeback? Sorry.
I'm sorry.
What do you think it is behind vinyl making a comeback? Why do you think that's happening?
Well, that's a good question. I think, well, there's more than one reason. I think part of it is, you know, some of the old diehard guys like Sebastian Bach, who's a huge vinyl connoisseur, they love the idea of the sound, or not idea, but they love the sound that vinyl produces versus digital. It's, to me, it sounds warmer, and I really like that. And I think, too, it's really cool to give fans something to hold in their hands other than a CD. It's a little bigger, and it makes, you know, it gives them something to really enjoy, you know. I don't know.
There's a collectability to them too, you know.
Right.
That's the thing. I think that's something that I forget the feeling people are missing collecting things. Everything going digital.
You're right.
What is those, the digital like cards now or whatever, what are they called? The PFTs or something like that. I don't remember what they're called.
Something like the download. I'm not sure, but I've heard there's download cards where you can, you know, just whatever. And that's cool. You know, I mean, it's just, I really miss everything, like you said, being collectible, and everything is just so disposable now, I feel like.
Yeah.
It's kind of a drag because, I mean, yeah, it's easier. I mean, people want to hear stuff. They can just download it on their phone and be done with it now. But you're missing that experience, man. You know, I remember as a kid, when Kiss would come out with a new record, it was an event, you know, and that's that's what I think is missing in today's world too. You know, it's like, you know, you go to the record store and you're like, can't wait. You know, if people lined up down the street, you know, back in the day.
Oh,
you know,
and I remember way back, guess it might have been 91, when Guns N' Roses released the Use Your Illusion album.
Yeah, that was a big,
and that was huge. And I remember skipping school so that I could run to the store to grab copies for Martin and I.
Yeah. That was right. And you know what? That was a good use. That was a good decision to skip school for that. Yeah. I'd endorse that all day to any kid.
Oh, yeah. I remember, I'm showing my age now, but I remember getting Kiss Dynasty when it first came out. And the bad part with that, though, was, well, the cool part, they had a poster inside of it you folded out. It had all four of them with, they had these black shirts on. It was just their faces. It was really cool.
Yeah.
But the bad part about some of the vinyl, especially back then, was if the truck that brought in the vinyl, if it wasn't air conditioned, sometimes it would get too hot and it would melt some of the vinyl. So you'd have it like, you know, it wouldn't roll straight, you know, it would skip, you know, and that was a drag. But other than that, it was great, though, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You can bring back vinyl. The 8-deck can stay.
Eight track.
I used to have Kiss Alive 2 and Paul Stanley's solo record on 8-track.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, yeah, nice.
I love that, too, 8-track.
Peter Criss, that was my favorite of the solo albums, personally. I love that one. That's I know it was a little bluesy, but...
Oh, dude, I love I Can't Stop the Rain. That's a great song.
Oh, absolutely.
Awesome stuff.
Peter, he's the nicest one I've met out of all four of them, believe it or not. Cheetah Paul were okay, but, you know, Ace was like, hey, what's your name? Okay, great, next.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's
Peter,
funny.
Man,
you know,
Peter's awesome.
We met Gene at a convention, so we only had, like, we were getting a photo with him, because that's the only way we were going to meet Gene. Right. You know, and so we had bought a couple of Kiss Colas. So we drank those beforehand, and we show up with them, and, you know, and he just looks at us and goes, what do you got there? We go, we got the Kiss Colas. He goes, you got Kiss Colas? I like that. That's good. Yeah. They're gone.
Have you ever heard of Craig Gass? You know that comedian named Craig
Gass? Of course,
Gass?
Yep. Yeah. He does an incredible Gene.
Oh, he is awesome.
Yeah, he does an amazing, amazing impression. What do you
got
Did
you guys see where I sang Heaven's on Fire with Gene and Paul? Have you seen that?
No, I haven't seen that.
Go to YouTube. And just type in Jeff Sings Heaven's on Fire. And it's me in 1995 at a St. Louis Kiss convention. Gene hands me his mic, and I did that intro to Heaven's on Fire with him.
Nice. That's like cool.
It's a bucket list moment for me, bro. I mean, what was that?
No kidding. That's from 95, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Hard to believe, yeah.
Jeff Sings,
Heaven on Fire. Yeah,
I'm
just going to do that right now. Hold on, Jeff. You know, we'll be a minute.
Well, you guys know who Michael Brandvold is, right?
Yeah.
He's our publicist.
Right.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. Yeah, he's awesome. He works with the label now, so yeah.
Well, yeah, and then, I mean... No. Like, I mean, you talk about RFL, and I mean, also, even back when you brought up the getting the vinyl and stuff like that, I mean, there's a lot of bands out there that struggle to get vinyl made. So tell me about RFL and the support that you're getting from them, because it seems to be really good.
Well, yeah. Basically, let's see. We've already hit our... We ordered on Amazon. If you pre-order us on Amazon and you sell 200 pre-orders, they'll put you on their front new artist page. And we're not there yet, but I think we've already sold. I mean, we're not on the page yet, but I'm pretty sure we've already pre-sold 200 copies. So RFL really they worked with Amped Alliance and they really back us on the CDs and everything. Now, vinyl will have to come out of our pockets, but that's okay. I mean, we'll sell them at the shows and maybe we'll give them you know, on giveaways or whatever. Yeah, they're really great with us, man. I mean, they really stepped up and helped us. John's awesome. He really is.
Well, because I mean, it's so important, I think, to, you know, when you're an artist, to have somebody behind you that is willing to support you and is looking out for you in that way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. It's so hard. You know, everything today is self-financed mostly, unless you're, you know, already a huge artist, you know. But even that, I mean, I would rather finance it myself and recoup it back later than back in the day when labels would, you know, advance these bands 150 grand or whatever it was, and then they'd have to pay them three times that back because of the interest in the contract and the fine print, and they didn't read it, you know. So I would much rather do it that way. And that way it's pretty much you own it. You know, there's no, you know, you don't have to pay anybody back on it, out of it. So, eventually we'll get tour support, but it's going to take a while. It's just going to, you know, we gotta build up sales on our new record. And hopefully when things start opening up, we'll get out there and start touring.
Did the album get recorded remotely from different people doing different parts and sending them in, or do you guys get together and, you know, do it all together?
We did it all together, with the exception of Mark Slaughter. He doesn't live here in Vegas, so I had to send. He's got a studio at his house in Nashville, so I just sent him the raw tracks and the stems, and he just laid down the solo there and sent it back to me. Same thing when we did Jukebox Hero, Frank Hannon. He lives up in Sacramento, so he did the same thing. But yeah, what it is my house, we all rehearse in my house, and Brandon, our producer, he comes out from LA and sets up his portable studio. Todd, our drummer, he plays with an electronic kit. And basically we program everything with that, and we play, you know, all the, build everything that way from the drums up, you know? So yeah, we do it there at my house. So we do play together. Yeah. Vocals we cut separately, you know, but it's all in the same, house, you know, my house, and we recorded that. So
That's a huge advantage, right? I mean, so many projects that seem to be, people are sending stuff in remotely nowadays. You know, so many bands are put together and their people aren't living in the same place. But I think it's a huge advantage, the fact that you guys could all get together.
Big time, yeah. Especially in today's world, yeah. You know, and I think it definitely helps with how we did the drums, because he plays to a click, you know, and you have to do it that way. That way, if there's any punch-ins or anything like that, you know, with any guitars or anything, it's easier to seamlessly do it that way. You know, acoustic kits sound great depending on the studio. So I think if the more control you have, the better off you'll be, you know?
Yeah, it's
go ahead. Kiss agrees with you, because that's what they did with Alive.
Yeah. Not
really live.
Hey man, Eddie Kramer was a genius.
Oh yeah, no question.
Turn the audience mics up, you know. Yeah.
So when are you releasing your live album?
not for a while yet.
Not yet. maybe do some more live shows.
Yeah. We gotta. Things that start opening up first.
Well, yeah, just be like, yeah, this is our quarantine live show. We're truly live. Sounds like this huge crowd. It's like, right? That was recorded in my basement.
Exactly.
But this is the Jeff Carlson Band live.
Yeah.
To an audience of the dog. So
yeah, dogs are an excellent audience. They always like whatever you do.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I mean, hanging out in Vegas, what's it like there? I mean, I know that, I mean, there obviously is so many of the cool clubs, and you've done some little things, have you, but of course nothing serious.
Well, we played Counts Vamped here. Yeah. That's the premier place as far as rock clubs going down. We played there. God, we played with Bill X. We played with Faster Pussycat, Bang Tango. We played with Toric Tora. We played with Electric Radio Kings, and Jizzy Pearl was our last show there on 2/29/20, but right when COVID hit. So we're probably going to be back in there. It's just a question of when. She's not at full capacity yet. So once they start opening back up full capacity, we'll be back in there. House of Blues, we played here August of 19, and that was a lot of fun, man. That big room in House of Blues in Mandalay Bay is the place, man. And in, we were supposed to play there April 17th of 20 with Tesla, but that got railroaded. Mm-hmm. So, man, what are you going to do, you know? And those guys, you know, I've talked to Frank a couple times, and they got nothing. So it's just like, wow. So, I mean, hopefully things will start opening back up again. So
yeah, because I mean, we talk to a lot of people, of course, and I mean, some people have, you know, are starting to get shows booked, and then some are much more, you know, playing it a little safer, I think, and not having anything. But I think that it's also so dependent on like, you know, everybody that's involved in the project, but also just, you know, where you need to play.
Well, just go to Texas. You can play in front of 38,000 people, like the baseball, know, right? Like the Rangers did. No masks, no nothing. You'll be fine.
Yeah,
maybe a little extreme.
I was joking with my manager the other day. I said, "Hey, man, why don't you book us in the states that are open?"
Yeah. No kidding, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going on it to a weird
it's
tour.
It's getting closer. But like I say, I think that might have been a little extreme that when I saw that stadium, I was like, whoa.
I don't think routing-wise it would be a very good thing, because I think you'd go from Iowa to Mississippi. To, yep. You know, it's like all over the place.
You'd be all over the place. Yeah. I don't think there's any place in Canada you could play.
You guys are closed still, huh?
Yeah,
everything's closed, yep. And you know, just when it looks like it's going to open, they just go and put in more rules, and you know, I think we're all just dying for music. Everybody's dying for that live entertainment. That's obvious, you know.
Yeah,
absolutely. Just dying for it. Yep. Just dying for it. I don't know. I mean, it's Vegas. I can't imagine it with the strip clubs closed. I mean, that's just not right.
That isn't right. They should list that as an essential business.
God, yeah, exactly. Damn right.
So, what do you guys do then? How do you think about your live show? Like, do you kind of discuss that in this off time? Yeah.
Yeah, everything we do is fairly calculated and planned. I mean, we've got. It evolves around the set list I make, you know, and we've got intro music, we've got, you know, and we've got a certain direction we run the show, you know. So I think it depends on the gig for what songs we do, you know, but for the most part, yeah, it's all fairly calculated.
So then, you know, of course, with the album, what's next for you guys?
We just want to get the album out and start playing, man. It's just a question of, you know, stuff opening back up. We're looking at possibly getting to Lake Havasu, Arizona, maybe in May or June, and maybe Phoenix, and maybe, I don't know, regional shows. You know, that's where we're going to start with, and then we'll take it from there, depending on how things go, you know.
Is it how many tracks was it again? 12, was it, including the bonus tracks?
Yeah.
So how many of those are you going to play?
That's a good question. Depending on the show, usually we get a 45-minute opener slot, usually for bigger bands. If that's the case, I would say probably 75% of it, depending on how long we get. You know, if we were headlining, we'd probably play just about all of it, minus the, you know, orchestral track, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, and we've got other songs that we used to play that will be in the set too, you know. Like we had an EP called Second Chance that will get re-released here later this year, and we're going to put new songs on it as well to make it a full-length record. And we'll be doing some of those songs too. So, yeah.
Are those brand new songs, or are those just songs that you had in the can from before that were recorded or something that you're going to put on?
That's exactly it. Originally, we recorded them a couple years ago with our original drummer, Mike Mittling, and he decided he had other things to do and decided to, you know, this wasn't for him. So we, the story goes is when I first recorded my first single was called Never Be Another You. When I first got signed up at Atomic Records, we had a guy named Todd Turgeon come in, which is our current drummer, and he recorded the track in the studio with us. Well, for some, I don't know what happened, but somehow he got, we thought he was had other plans with another band or whatever. So we brought in Mike Mittling to play with us. And then Mike decided he wanted it out. So I called Todd and he came back in and the rest is history. So what we'll probably do is the songs that we recorded with Mike, we'll re-record those with Todd's drums. And then we'll probably put three or four new songs, brand new songs that nobody's ever heard on it to make it a full length record. So that'll be the next project, actually.
Yeah, because I guess with the off time, I mean, even with the album, like, you still need to keep yourself busy doing something. Oh, yeah. And I'm sure that songwriting isn't one of those things that just turns off in your head, like, oh, I'm good. I don't need to write any more songs for now.
No, you have to write when the mood strikes, man. You know, it's Robbie's got a lot of great ideas. He's a really great riff writer. He really is. And he's a great arranger. So we just try to put our heads together, and like I always say, him and I together make one hell of a guitar player.
so many people we hear about, it's the chorus is where the band, where the song starts with you. Is it the riff?
Depends. I mean, like Promise the Moon, obviously that was originally, it wasn't written with the chorus starting it off like it is now. So Robbie and I restructured that. It just depends on the song, honestly. Not every song's like that. It just depends on what you think the best formation is going to be, you know.
How about when you're working on a full-length album, your first, you know, full-length album, how about the sequencing of the tracks and how much time is spent trying to find the perfect track order?
That's a good question. A fair bit. We had to sit down and really put our heads together, and the four of us basically, you know, because I try to run everything. It's not a dictatorship by any means. It's a true band effort here. It's not, I mean, even though it's my name, it doesn't mean that I don't, you know, want the guys to put their input in, because, you know, this is what it's all about to me, is what we create as a band, you know. So they're so creative, and they give a lot to the finished product of the song and the presentation and everything, that we just basically put our heads together, you know, and then at the end of the day, I make sure everybody's happy with their decision, and then we go from there, you know. So that's how we do it.
Now, you say that's a good question. That's because Brett usually asks it, and I kind of stole it from him. I've now made it my own.
That's okay.
Yeah, that's teamwork right there.
Yeah.
See, yeah, it's exactly the it's exactly the same kind of thing with us, you know, like I do something, and then, you know, I want to make sure that he feels involved. So
yeah. He pretends that he cares.
That's awesome.
That's, well, good stuff.
Jeff, I know that that it's great talking to you. I love it. We've taken a good chunk of your time, so I think we should let you tell all the folks where they can find you, keep up with you, and where they can find Yesterday's Gone.
Oh, thank you guys. JeffCarlsonBand.com. The album will be released on April 23rd. And we our new single Fire is out already. You can get that on Spotify. That's already out, streaming on Spotify. And Yeah, we're on JCB Army on Facebook, Instagram, Jeff Carlson Band, Twitter, Jeff Carlson Band. We're on all the social media sites, you know. So
I'm sensing a trend in the whole Jeff Carlson Band thing. I don't know. It might just be me, but.
Right. It's all those sites that I just mentioned are on jeffcarlsonband.com. So, you know, there's the links everywhere on that page.
Well, I urge everybody to listen to Yesterday's Gone when they get a chance, because, I mean, it's a great rock and roll album, and it'll definitely get your energy going, because there's some really good music, Jeff, and we appreciate you coming on the show, and we absolutely look forward to talking to you again and following your career.
Thank you. Absolutely. You guys are awesome. Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. All the best. Talk soon.
You bet. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Falling down through